Hey, Mike.
Hey, Michelle.
I was wondering, did you book your trip for the Tower of Terror 10 miler yet?
Yes, I did. Guess with whom?
I'm wondering, what did you do? Who did you book with?
Miles Fan Travel. By the way, did you book your trip for Wine and Dine yet?
I did, and it's also with Miles Fan Travel. Why did you use MEI Miles Fan Travel?
Because I want 100% guaranteed pleasure when I go. I don't want to worry. I don't want to think about, gee, what might go wrong, because nothing will go wrong with MEI Travel and Mouse Fan Travel. By the way, have you booked for a reunion yet?
Are we talking about reunion too?
Well, there's a connection here, you know.
I haven't yet. Should I?
Yes.
Okay.
How about January races? Have you booked for the January races?
Definitely. I'm using MEI as well for that.
What about the Princess Half Marathon?
Also MEI.
And that's it. So what we're trying to say is that, boy, if we use them, and I've been going to Walt Disney World for a long time, then you know that we don't want anything to go wrong. And so we go with those professional vacation planners at MEI and Mouse Fan Travel. We want you to do the same. So visit them at MEI-travel.com or mousefantravel.com. Or visit them by clicking the banner on the Mickey Miles Podcast.com page.
This is the Mickey Miles Podcast. From 5K fun runs to full marathons, this is the podcast that helps you learn everything you need to know about running Disney races. The Mickey Miles Podcast is not affiliated with, authorized, or endorsed by, or in any way officially connected with Run Disney, the Walt Disney Company, Disney Enterprises, Inc., or any of their affiliates. Now, here are your hosts for the Mickey Miles Podcast, Michelle Scribner-McLean and Mike Scopa.
Welcome to episode 91 of the Mickey Miles Podcast. My name is Mike Scopa from WDW Today, and with me on the show is Sweaty Band Princess Michelle Scribner-McLean. Hello, Sweaty Band. And I also should call you Spider Woman, I guess, huh?
Oh, because of what happened to me today when I was running, right?
Right.
Yeah, that has nothing to do with Sweaty Bands. But yeah, I'm in Orlando, and I ran early this morning through a gigantic spider web, and I had spider web from my shoulder all the way down to my knee, and when I turned around, I was dragging a gigantic spider along with me as I ran. So it was quite the experience. And I love creepy crawly things being a science teacher, but that was a little too close to nature for me.
Speaking of creepy crawly things, it's time to do a shout out.
Well, I don't think this person's creepy crawly, but I do want to give a shout out to one of our listeners whose name is Leslie Rask. And I'm giving her a shout out because she made me chuckle. She, after listening to our Running Gear for Women show, she went out and spent $110. So I hope everything works out, Leslie. Our reputation's going to be on the line. But sounds like she bought some skirts and some other stuff. So go, Leslie. Power shopper.
Wow. Be careful with your podcast. We're doing a question show again. And to start us off, Michelle, why don't you read the first question?
Sure. Hello, Michelle and Mike. I have two suggestions for your show. One suggestion is to refer to gels as gels and not goo. Goo is a brand and one of many different gel products. Run Disney races offer gel, especially Cliff Shot, but they don't offer goo. Many are counting on your podcast to be a well-appreciated source for accurate Run Disney and race-specific information. Mike, any comments about that?
Let's see. I think it's very easy for us to think about things like when we say Kleenex, when we mean facial tissue, when we say Q-tip instead of cotton swab, when we say Xerox instead of copy machine or whatever. And in the same manner, a lot of runners will say goo when they mean gel. So as much as I understand the point here, it's not a it's not a catastrophe that we're saying goo. I think that it's a point well made. And you know, goo is a gel, and there are gels like Cliff Shots and goo, and you know, it depends upon whatever you like. I mean, I know I started off with Cliff Shots, and Then I started using goo, and I think everybody kind of refers to it as goo. And, I mean, if you recall, lots of times in your life you refer to certain things as something other than they are. So we'll try to do better, Michelle.
Yeah, I think we have referred to it as other things. I think we rely on that word goo, but it isn't like we actually even use goo all the time. We use other things. My second suggestion comes from my concern that listeners might become disenchanted with your podcast due to hearing misinformation stated as fact. I suggest that you consider prefacing your factual information with a caveat, like, I don't know for sure, or I've heard, or maybe, or it is my understanding, or I'm not an expert, or the Disney Run website says, I'm not referencing opinion statements, but supposed fact-based statements. You don't have to be experts, but you'll always be trusted if you preface your information with your lack of surety and or supporting sources. That way, seasoned runners, Run Disney experts, medically trained folks, and all listeners will be able to thoroughly enjoy, trust, and highly recommend your podcast, knowing that you'll let us know when you're not sure of something or when you're passing on some other source's information. I appreciate your time and energy you put into the podcast. Best regards, Terry Mann.
So, Terry, I understand what you're saying here, and I think we've tried as much as possible to preface a lot of things we say by saying, you know, we're not experts, we're not professional trainers, we're not professional runners or whatever. But I can tell you, I've been running for 45 years, and I think I know a lot of things that I've gotten through experience. But even though I have that experience, I always preface everything by saying, you know, I'm not an expert, but this is what I've heard, this is what I've read, this is what I've discussed with many people who are professionals, and we try to do the best job we can. We understand that there are always going to be listeners who will take everything as fact, and it's our responsibility to do the best job we can, but it's also our responsibility to remind everyone that we're not professionals. We do have a lot of experience, but we're not professionals. And I want to thank you, Terry, for sending that letter.
Yeah, I think what we're trying to do here is not to, I know that I don't consider myself a professional runner. I think what we're trying to do is create a community of runners who can help each other learn to run better regardless of your running level and navigate those Disney races that can be pretty tricky. So I think we do try our best to say we're not doctors, I'm not that type of doctor, or we're not sure. And we often ask our listeners to report on more information on the Mickey Miles podcast Facebook page if they can.
One more thing is that I want to emphasize that this podcast mission statement is to give folks information regarding Run Disney events. And, of course, what comes into play here is running gear, injuries, training, and other things. And we try to do our best. And we're not professional because we don't get paid for running. And I don't think I'm going to be winning any races soon. Okay, let's go on to the next question. And this question actually is directed towards Michelle, so let me read it towards Michelle. It says, it's from a listener, whoever that is. Hi, Michelle. On this week's question and answer show, you mentioned that you suffered a neck injury while running. Earlier this week, my wife tried going running with me. Since she hasn't done much running in the past, I was just going to do a slower run-walk combo. After about a minute or so running, she got a sharp pain near the base of her neck. While the pain never let up and unfortunately led to a migraine, we did get a nice early morning walk together. I had never heard of a neck injury from running. Just wondering what you did to overcome the injury and if you had any thoughts.
Well, this person did sign their name, but they asked me not to put it on the question, which is fine. We can do that if anybody ever wants to write in anonymously. So this is, of course, as we just talked about this with our last question, this is where we say, I'm not a neck doctor. I'm not a medical doctor. I can only tell you about my experience. And my experience was that I did start to experience neck problems on some of my neck and shoulder problems on some of my longer runs. I went to the doctor and she sent me right to a physical therapist, and they did all sorts of different exercises to help me relax the muscles in my neck. Whenever I've had a massage, I typically get the comment that I hold all the stress up in my neck, and through going to physical therapy, I found out that that was happening when I was running too. So now I actually have to tell myself when I'm running to put my shoulders down, to relax my arms, and that helps me. I think, you know, we have so many bones in the neck and shoulders that everybody's problem is going to be a little different. I've never had migraines ever, so I'm sorry that your wife experienced that. But definitely go see a doctor if that continues, and maybe to start off just walking and getting the endurance up and then moving to running after that neck feels better. But I think everybody's problem is going to be a little different here, so definitely go see a doctor first.
Good advice.
Okay, the next question is from Sue Kessenweather, and she says, "Hi, Mike and Michelle. When registering for the Tink weekend, I noticed that some changes to the proof time section and thought I should share this and make everyone aware of them. The proof time section now reads, if proof of time is not provided by November 1st, 2013, data provided is incomplete and cannot be verified. You'll be placed in the last corral. And as a reminder, you will no longer be able to bring a proof of your estimated finish time to run a relations booth during the expo and have your start corral placement changed." Then Sue says, "After seeing this, I checked the WDW Marathon Weekend and Princess Half Marathon Weekend, and the rule change seems to be across the board. So it appears that starting in 2014, your expected finish time will not matter unless you are able to submit proof of time to back it up. And that can no longer be done at the expo. For the remaining races this year, the Disneyland Half Weekend, Tower Terror, Wine and Dine, you will still be able to submit proof of time at the runner relations booth. Looks like proof of time is getting more and more important to run Disney. So it's going to be more and more important to register for local 10Ks or longer to get good corral placement. Anyway, I hope this info helps someone out there. As always, thanks for an awesome podcast. See you on the road." That's great information. Mike, what do you think?
Well, I think I'm trying to come up with a theory regarding why this is so. And I think that it stems from the popularity of the Run Disney events and how corral placement is becoming very, very critical in regards to balancing out the field. For instance, if you have X number of runners, you want to balance that over the course of 7, 8, 9, 10, or 14 corrals. They don't want to do adjustments later on. Although maybe it would be less than 5%, but I just think they want everything settled before race day. And it looks like they've drawn a line in the sand, and it will be different starting in January. And I think Sue made a good point. It's makes it even more important to think about those local races where you can get that good time so you can get that good corral placement.
First of all, Sue, thank you. This is such a helpful letter, and I'm sure that a lot of people will really benefit from this information. I think that Disney, we have said many times, these races are growing in popularity. They're selling out so quickly that Disney can do this. They can change their expectations, and people will need to comply, of course. The other thing, too, is that I think a lot of people are starting to figure out this thing, bringing your proof of registration to the Run Disney booth or runner registration booth at the expo, and maybe it's getting out of hand. I've only seen a few dozen people at any race with those little extra stickers, but maybe it's just too much. And maybe they're getting some arguments from runners about what counts as proof of time. I believe that volunteers man those booths, and it's not really a volunteer's place to argue with a runner. Not that I'm saying runners are arguers in general, but I think there are a lot of people at Run Disney races who may have less experience with changing their proof of time or bringing their proof of time. So anyway, I think it's a whole bunch of different things, and I think I'm happy Sue sent that in.
Yes, yes, very good. Thank you, Sue. Next question comes from Todd from New Jersey, and he says, "My question is, you talk about having a base to run from. What does that entail? Does it mean I should run further or faster, etc., each training, or should I try to replicate what I currently do? How do I get myself to these said stable bases? Like, if I want to run a few 5K or 10K races over the fall, what kind of base would I need? I basically just run out to stay in shape with no real race type goal in mind. but I would like to get to that point. Thanks for the help. Michelle, you want me to go first?
I'm gonna put it to
you first. So, Todd, when we talk about a base, we basically, when we're talking about a base, we are referring to what your average normal weekly mileage would be. So, for instance, if you run 3 times a week and you're doing 3 to 5 miles, then your base is anywhere from 9 to 15 miles. Once you know what your base is, then you can say, okay, this is my starting point, and now I'm going to go from there and train for whatever, be it a 10K, 5K, 10K, half marathon, marathon, ultra, whatever. But it looks like you have a pretty good base now. It says you run to stay in shape, and a lot of us have started out that way. If you run 2 or 3 times a week, then you've already established a, quote, base, and everybody's base is different. It's from that base that you begin your building of your stamina, your building of your distance. So it sounds like you're already there, Todd.
Yeah, I found this one very interesting because I never thought of building a base as important until I started to do more races. And then I decided that I wanted to keep my level of fitness up, so I decided to run 2 or 3 times during the weekday, but I knew that I had all these longer distance races coming up in the fall, so I just arbitrarily decided that my base was going to be about 10 miles every Saturday with 2 or 3 one-hour runs on the weekend. And since I've started the Jeff Galloway training, I think that's helped me because he kind of expects that I'll have that base. I'm kind of working with him, and I've told him that's what the base is. But I think because you want to do 5Ks or 10Ks, if you keep running 4 or 5 miles, you know, if your long run once a week is 4 or 5 miles, you're going to be in plenty good shape to keep up those 5 and 10Ks whenever you want to do them. It's a good place to be, and I would say that for me it's helped my confidence to know that 10 miles is really nothing right now. That's good.
Next question. Michelle, would you do the honors?
Sure. It is from Becky Kale from Cincinnati, Ohio, and she says, as you know, the most important part of running, the race, is all the cool stuff you get, especially the shirts. Becky, you're a kindred spirit. So my question for you guys is, how many shirts do you get when you run the Goofy? Is there a special shirt for the Goofy? Do you get the half and the full shirt as well? Seems like you should get a shirt to match all of those cool medals. Thanks for the great show. So I'll tackle this one. Yes, you actually do get 3 shirts. And Becky, you get a half marathon shirt, you get a full marathon shirt, and you get a special shirt just for the Goofy. So you get 3 tech shirts. And typically it's been like an orange color, a rust color for that Goofy. But you got me thinking because I'm thinking for the Dopey, when I do the Dopey, you're going to get a 5K shirt, a 10K shirt, a half shirt, a full shirt.
Dopey and a Goofy?
And a Dopey shirt because you're doing the Goopy and then a Goofy. So I think you're going to have, what is that? How many is that?
Six.
1, 2, it's 6 shirts. I think you're going to get 6 shirts. So run Disney races and you'll never have any money left, but you'll have lots of tech shirts. So, but anyway, yes, you're going to get 3. That's my long answer to your short question.
So Michelle, how much is it to sign? Was Dopey $350?
The Dopey? I think it was $4.95.
So $4.95, 6 goes into $4.95, $80 a shirt. Okay.
Well, you got to think of the metal and all the.
Yeah, that's true. That's true. Our next question comes from Justin Eckstein of Cincinnati, Ohio, and Justin says, "Mike and Michelle, I am a faithful listener, and I have a question about shoes. Caveat: we're not an expert about shoes, but." We're going to try to answer this. I know you guys have talked about how running shoes can influence the way you run, and now that is true. So I am assuming that what you wear on an everyday basis also does. I wear gym shoes on a daily basis, but I was thinking, should I be wearing my running shoes? Because that could be expensive. Should I just wear my old running shoes or just stick with a reasonably priced shoe that feels comfortable? Thanks for the great podcast. I listen to every run when training for the Indianapolis Monumental. So, he wants to know, what should he be wearing on a daily basis?
So, did we answer a similar question to this, I think, a few weeks ago?
Maybe.
Kind of. You know, my answer to this, and again, I'm not an expert, but talking to my podiatrist, I had a few little feet issues a few years ago. I want to keep my feet in shape by working different muscles. So I've been in Orlando, and I've actually been wearing sandals a lot, but I have several different types of sneakers that I also wear. So I think it depends on you and what you feel comfortable with. Is that what you would say, Mike? You pretty much wear the same type of sneaker all the time.
Again, everybody's different, Justin. So once I hit the 300-mile mark on a pair of running shoes, they now become my everyday walking shoes. And then I move on to a new pair of running shoes. I just like the idea of being consistent. I like my feet to feel the same type of padding. I like my feet to feel the same level of space or whatever in the shoe. I like my feet to not have any surprises. So when I lace up my running shoes or I lace up my walking shoes, my feet are saying, oh, yeah, I've been here before. But that's me. I think that as long as you don't wear anything that's going to cause blisters or cause some pain, rubbing, I think you'll be okay. It's always good to wear the most comfortable shoes possible, and you should be okay. Thanks for the question.
Yeah, I don't think you need to go out and buy six pairs of your running shoes that you're wearing. Definitely not. Okay, the next question is from Heather Lynn Patton Graham. She asks, my husband and I are registered for the Twilight Zone 10 miler. First race at Disney following the Galloway training program. Yay, Heather! I just got an email from Disney with reminders and pointers in preparing for the race, and it says something about bringing a chip time with us from a previous race. Ack! So this means we need to run a race between now and then provide them with a time, right? We are newbies. I apologize for a silly question. Thanks for any help or guidance. Love the podcast. So, Heather, I don't think, you know, I'm a teacher. I always say no question is a stupid question. I think this is a great question, and I'm sure other people are going to have this too. When you arrive and it's your first race, you'll be put in the last corral, and that's not the worst thing in the world to be in the last corral. You'll be with other people who are new runners and who don't have a time. Once you run your first race, you know, as Joe Terracani says, you've made history. You're in the books. You're a runner, so now you have a time. If you want to improve your time before that, you can run a local race. It has to be a 10K or above, and that time will count. But don't feel the pressure. I think you should just concentrate on preparing for that 10-miler, enjoying your first Disney race. You're going to, you know, you'll have plenty of fun, and it's perfectly okay to be in the last corral. In fact, it's in some ways probably a little bit less pressure because the higher up, the higher the letter, the faster the runners you'll be with. Mike, anything to add?
Oh, I think that was a great answer, Michelle. I think, Heather, that, you know, if you can find a 10K between now and then, fine. It would be nice if you were properly placed, and that means that you would be running with people people who are right around your pace. It's frustrating to see people run by, and it's frustrating to run with a number of runners who may not be and may not want to run as fast as you. So it's nice to run with a group of people who are just about the same speed. So good luck. And again, like Michelle said, don't stress over it. You're going to enjoy the race. We all enjoy the nighttime races. We don't worry about corral placement. So have fun. The next question comes from Gardner Watts. And Gardner says, hey, Mike and Michelle, been listening for a few months and am a big fan of your show and the helpful advice you guys give, hoping you can help me out. First, a little background on my story. I'm a 32-year-old man who was in horrible shape and weighed 335 pounds at the beginning of the year. I decided 2013 was the year I was finally going to get fit. And since I was looking for a reason to go to WDW anyway, I decided to sign up for the Tower of Terror 10-miler in October as motivation. Fast forward to August, I'm down to 265, but the running training isn't going as well. I've been walking all year, but didn't really start running until 2 weeks ago. I'm using the Galloway run-walk-run system, trying to get back on schedule with the Tower of Terror beginning training plan. But so I'm so far behind. Last week, my first week, I was doing a 15-second, 45-second run-walk ratio and did 4 miles on Saturday instead of the 6 miles on the schedule. This week, week two, I did a 20-40 ratio and did 5.5 miles on Saturday instead of 3 miles with a magic mile. I was hoping to be able to quickly build up to this week's 7-mile Saturday, but I don't think I'll be able to do that as I was pretty tired, sore after 5.5. Anyway, this is getting long, but basically I'm way off schedule. Do you guys have any advice to speed up my training and get me back on schedule? Should I increase days I run or something? Thanks. Okay, here's where we again say we're not experts, but we can mostly tell you what works for us. So Michelle, you want me to go first? So what I would suggest to you, Gardner, is that think about when that race is and count back the weeks from the date of that race and try to figure out how you can equally divide those weeks into an amount of distance that you have to increase every week in order to get to that 10-mile point on the day of the race. Now, what this means is that you should try to be as good as you can in figuring that out and pacing yourself. My suggestion is that you run twice during the week, maybe for an hour. Try to get up to an hour twice a week, maybe a Tuesday and a Thursday, and then Saturday or Sunday, whichever day works best for you, try to do your long run of the week. I can tell you that by the time you get to 8.5 miles, you're probably going to be ready. You may not realize it, but your body will be ready. You're just going to have to convince yourself, confidence-wise, that you'll be ready. But that would be my suggestion, Michelle.
So, Mike, I think you gave some great advice there. I'm going to add on to that and say that one of your questions was whether or not you should run more often during the week. It sounds to me like you might be having a hard time sticking to the schedule. So 2 walk runs during the week, I think that Mike suggested, are really important. But those long runs on Saturdays or Sundays are very, very important. If, as Mike said, you get up to about 8.5 miles, you should be okay. But you also have to consider your pace, too. So you need to, I think it's a schedule thing. You need to just be really religious about getting out there. I know that getting up in the morning or, you know, doing your run whenever you want to do it is tough. You just got to say, got to do it. Just got to do it. Because you want to be safe and you want to have a great time when you go to that race. And you want to make sure that you have the confidence to finish the race. So I think you should be okay. Just add a little bit more mileage and a little bit more time every time you go out for that long run until you build up to about 8.5 miles. You should be okay with that. Yes?
Good idea.
Okay. The next question's from John Beale, and he says, "Hey, guys, I have a fun question. Last year I did my first marathon at Marathon Weekend, and I love the course. I love running through all the parks, plus the wide world of sports. Running the bases was probably the coolest out-of-park feature. The 20th mile was also a treat. Going back to your fantasy episode, if you, too, could design a marathon course, what would it include? Would you go through any of the resorts, Downtown Disney? Keep in mind you can be as creative as you want to." I think this could be a whole show unto itself, so I'm going to continue on. "What if they drained the lazy rivers and the water parks and the runners did a loop through those? Or maybe the runners could run through the Savannah and Animal Kingdom. You have over 26 miles to work with, so let's hear what the course would be if you were in charge. Keep up the awesome shows that keep me motivated to train out in the Phoenix heat." Mike, this is such a great question. I honestly don't think we can answer it in one question. We did answer a little bit on episode 90 when we asked our runner buddies to talk about elements that they would include, but I think we'll have to give this another thought and maybe address it in maybe a panel discussion. What do you think?
Yeah, I think we've talked about this before. The only thing I can add is, John, I would say you start the marathon, use the same course as is used right now, but you started at midnight and you finish in Epcot going around World Showcase during Illuminations. which is about 6 o'clock in the morning. That's how I would do it.
I think you've already started answering the question, but we'll definitely have another show on that. Thanks, John. Okay, and I think we have one more question, and that question is from... We have a question from Siobhan Connor, and she says, is the Dumbo Dumbledare meet at Häagen-Dazs open to people who are just doing the half marathon and not the Dumbo Dumbledare? And Siobhan, I read this question on the air because I thought this was a great opportunity to remind people that we are going to have a Mickey Miles podcast meet at Disneyland. It's going to be on Saturday, August 31st at 3 p.m. Pacific time. And anybody, whether you're running or not running or running one race or running all the races, is invited to come. You can RSVP on our Facebook page, or you can just show up. We're meeting at the Häagen-Dazs, Downtown Disney. And we'd love to see you and meet you, Siobhan.
And I'm looking forward to Disneyland in a couple of weeks. And we want to remind you again that this episode of the Mickey Miles podcast has been brought to you by MEI Travel and Mouse Fan Travel. And we talked about expertise on the show. And if there's anyone who has expertise, it's the vacation planners at MEI Travel and Mouse Fan Travel. They are experts in Disneyland, Walt Disney World, Disney Cruise Line, Adventures by Disney, and also Run Disney, as there are several vacation planners, several travel agents who work for Becky at MEI Travel, Mouse Run Travel, who are runners too. So they can answer all your questions, and you will not be disappointed. So please visit them at MEI-travel.com, mousefantravel.com, or once again, you can click on their banner at the Mickey Miles podcast website. So for Michelle Scribner-McLean, this is Mike Scopa saying we'll see you on the road.
Thanks for joining us on today's episode of the Mickey Miles podcast. We hope you enjoyed listening. Our discussion continues on Facebook at facebook.com/Mickey Miles podcast, where you can give us your comments and feedback on the show. You can also follow us on Twitter at twitter.com/Mickey Miles pod. And if you have any questions for us, you can send them to questions@MickeyMilesPodcast.com, and we'll try to answer them as soon as possible. For all of us here at the Mickey Miles Podcast, this is Rick Gregg saying until next time, thanks for listening, and we'll see you on the road.